Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Do you want to get into Antonio Brown? Did you see that Antonio Brown turned himself into the
Turned himself in at 10 p.m. at night.
Yeah.
The mugshot looks like, you know, like how much can you judge from a mugshot? You know, sometimes they catch
you. I haven't seen it yet.
Sometimes you catch you at the wrong moment.
Is he smiling? Antonio Brown strikes me as somebody who would smile in a mugshot.
I would. I'd try to put my best face on.
You know it's going to be out there.
You ever see any of these Twitter accounts of like attractive mugshots? Both men and women. Well, there was that one guy from a few years back, remember, that like women were just losing it over.
Right.
He was a very, very good looking guy. And, you know, if you don't dig too deep into it, you start, you know, these women just get, then they find out, oh, like, well, he's not even like an ambitious criminal. He's kind of a low rent criminal.
Right, right.
If I'm going to be attracted to a woman's mugshot, I want to see that she's into some kind of crime I can respect or get with. Not that like, oh, she was selling it on the street for $3
right,
or something.
Yeah. Right, right, right. Here's the story on Antonio Brown. As Seth just said, he turned himself into Broward County Jail on Thursday night in response to an arrest warrant filed against him on three charges. We actually have the 911 call of the moving truck driver to the Broward County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah.
Is that
it's an attractive mugshot, I think, actually.
It's not bad.
He looks very serious. Knowing Antonio Brown, you know, the ironic thing here is knowing Antonio Brown, where he always kind of looks a little bit sleepy when he's talking. If anything, he looks a little bit more alert here.
He does.
So if you had to guess if he was out of his normal state, it looks like maybe, okay, what was he doing up at 10 p.m. and up and about and wanting to get himself? He might be a little more hyper typical.
Do you know anybody else that has his haircut that he's had for years where it's a mohawk, but he keeps the hair? Where normally,
it's
like
a mohawk, but without, like, where it looks like the mohawk is in a war with the actual surrounding hair that's supposed to be shorter.
Yeah, as opposed to Mr. T, who looks like all of his hair retreated and just left, and he just has the strip across the middle.
Yeah, that's a mohawk. Because it's not a complete short.
But he does.
His is kind of an unkempt faux hawk.
Okay.
His isn't like in this picture, especially.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. The 911 call from the mover truck. And for those who aren't totally up to speed on Antonio Brown, here's the Cliff Notes version of what happened. There is a mover that was bringing some of his stuff from California to Florida. He had a home in California. They were bringing some of his stuff to his home in Hollywood, Florida. And Antonio Brown owed the moving company $4,000 for the move. According to the mover, Antonio Brown didn't want to pay the $4,000, just the latest in a long list of bills that Antonio Brown apparently doesn't feel like paying. And Antonio Brown reportedly, allegedly, started A, throwing trucks at the moving van, and B, reaching into the cab of the moving van and taking the keys away. His personal trainer got physically involved, according to this mover. With the mover, he got physically involved to where there are assault charges now against Antonio Brown and his trainer. The 911 call, we've got a couple chunks of it here for you. First, here is the 911 operator asking the mover if he believes that Antonio Brown is on something.
And you believe he's on something?
Oh, absolutely. He's smoking or something.
And he's smoking drugs?
No. He's definitely hyper because one of his buddies was trying to fight with him to cool him down.
And you believe he's on, you said he's smoking something in front of you?
He did, yes.
Okay.
He tried to grab the keys from my hand, so.
Okay, sir. Where are the weapons that he had now, the rocks? Does he still have them in his hand?
They right in front of his building. He grabbed several and tried to enthrall in the truck.
I need to get his description.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
He's the black guy. His name Antonio Brown, probably a footballist player,
okay.
NFL player.
All right, so that's him making the initial call.
Yeah. I wonder, what accent was that guy? Somebody texted in. It wasn't, what's that?
It sounded Russian.
Oh, really? No, I thought it was an African, like, I was trying to figure, I thought it wasn't Nigerian, I thought it might be, like, Cameroon or something.
Oh, I don't know, he sounded Russian to me.
Did it sound Russian to you?
A little bit. Well, do you want to hear more?
Yeah.
Okay, here's
somebody
more.
Text, and people text in. I'm trying to figure out what country this guy is
okay,
from.
Okay, here is when Antonio Brown, the description here is basically Antonio Brown and his trainer are kind of circling the van right now, and the 911 operator is saying, do not take this into your own hands.
Antonio, I see him in the mirror and his friends.
Oh.
And what are they doing? They're taking stuff forcefully out of the trailer?
Yes, he's taking stuff forcefully out of the trailer.
Yeah, that does sound more Russian.
This is not his stuff. What is he doing?
Don't confront anybody. Don't argue with anybody. Let the police take care of it. Okay?
All right, so the
this is not his stuff. Yeah, I don't know why I wouldn't have heard the Russian in that.
So the visual that I get just in hearing those two clips are Antonio Brown is shows up. He's asking for $4,000 for moving a bunch of stuff, presumably expensive stuff, across the country. And Antonio Brown's response to finding out that he has a bill for $4,000 is to start throwing rocks at the truck and have he and his trainer go in and steal the keys from the driver. And then in that second clip, they're just emptying things out of the moving van. They go in themselves and start taking things out of the moving van. That's what's going on with Antonio Brown right now.
And one of my Nigerian friends right now very quickly texted me, like, definitely not African.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
I know. When you played it the second time, I must have, one of the first words he had, or I heard, I kind of got it ingrained in my head somehow. Yeah, that was definitely not. Yeah.
You're listening to KILT and KILT HD2, a radio.com station.
So Antonio Brown checks himself in at 10 p.m. He checked himself into the Swank Hollywood County, Broward County Jail.
Not nearly as nice as the hospital rooms where you got your knee surgery.
Imagine one of the issues with checking yourself into the jail at 10 p.m. is that I don't think they process you until the next day.
Well, he had to stay overnight.
Yeah. I mean, almost like he wanted to go to jail fantasy camp or something. Did they put him in a special cell, I'm guessing, most celebrities and whatnot?
Good question. No idea.
I watched this Aaron Hernandez documentary where even being in a special cell doesn't completely protect you from, say, verbal harassment.
Well, no, not at all.
And Antonio Brown, who we know can get set off a little bit by verbal harassment. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the inmates at first or whatever, you know, he's just a county jail, are they looking at him like somebody to be harassed or somebody to like, oh, I want to have a chat with Antonio and figure out what the hell's going on?
I don't know. Probably depends if he's on your fantasy team at some point or something. The odds that he was in the jail and he's in lockup and there's, you know, maybe like 10 or 20 other guys in there.
Yeah.
The odds that one of them came up and said to him, you were on my fantasy team 1 year and wanted to thank you for that 1,800 yards you had back in 2015.
What are the odds that one of them's a Raiders fan?
Much higher than him being on their fantasy team.
Right. So the Raiders fan in there might be super PO'd.
This is where the gambling expert on the show speaks out here, Seth. The bet that you put is not, is there a Raider fan in the lockup with Antonio Brown? It's the over-under on the number of Raider fans that there are with Antonio Brown.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's just a lot of Raiders fans.
Ne'er-do-wells.
So, that's not true. 49ers fans are worse than Raiders fans.
They are.
Raiders fans, when the owners had their meetings here, over at the energy corridor over there, I went over and interviewed some of the Raider crazies outside because they were protesting the Raiders moving at that point. And it was fun. It was one of the weirdest experiences of my life because I'm talking to like some dude who's dressed up like a demon with shoulder pads on and everything, who I believe was a literal attorney, like who actually like very eloquent. But they were explaining that, look, Raiders fans get a bad wrapped because of A, the costumes, and B, because the gang culture in the 80s adopted wearing Raiders gear back when the Raiders were in LA. So a lot of times, like, those images are associated with Raiders where it's just they're two completely separate things.
I can tell you, Amy and I did this experiment on a single night. If you remember, back in 2013, the Texans played the 49ers on Sunday Night Football in Week 5. Matt Schaub threw a pick 6 to Tremaine Brock on the third play of the game. It was Sunday Night Football in the Bay Area. We went to the game. That was a year before I came over here to Sports Radio 610. Later that night, the Raiders played a game at like 9 o'clock at night because the A's had a playoff game that day. So they did an unprecedented thing. They haven't done it since, where they played the Sunday Night Football game on NBC between the Niners and the Texans. The 49ers destroyed the Texans that night. And then they played a game in Oakland that was on the NFL Network. It started at like 9 o'clock at night. Raiders Chargers starting at like, it was probably like 8 o'clock Pacific time. Mm-hmm. And so the games were literally a BART train ride away from one another. So Amy and I, in the third quarter of the Texans-Niners game, were like, let's get out of here. They were losing 31-3, the Texans were. We got on the BART train, went over to Oakland, And the game, by the time we got over there, the Raider game was just about a kickoff.
Yeah.
We bought a couple of tickets on the bridge going over the train tracks from some father and son that were smoking weed on the bridge right
father,
there.
Father-son weed smoking
was a beautiful thing.
That could have still
thing.
Meant something because it wasn't completely legal yet.
That's
right.
They were pushing the limits. But this guy comes up to me and he says, hey, brother, you want to buy tickets to the game? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And I said, how much? He shows me the tickets, and they were good tickets. They were like on the 25-yard line. And I said, how much? And he goes, how much you got? And I'm like, okay, this, I feel like I might get held up right here. I told him the truth. I have $46 on me in cash. That was the God's honest truth. And he said, well, I'm not selling these for $46. I said, that's fine. I said, the game's about to start. If you're still here with these tickets in 10 minutes, let's do a deal. 10 minutes later, we do a deal. So I did the deal, $46, and you let me walk behind you into the stadium while you're smoking that joint so I can get a little bit of a contact high going into the stadium. I'm a hell of a negotiator. But to your point about Raider fans, I felt much safer at a Raider game than I did a 49er game. And that was back when they played at Candlestick Park. So it was a rough crowd at those 49er games. But the Raider fans, even though they looked mean and nasty and everybody's wearing a jersey in there, a lot of them are face painted up, wearing, you know, some sort of sharp objects on their person at some point, could not have been nicer.
Right, yeah, pleasant. They know they're making up for the fact that it was like when I shaved my head for the first time and I realized that people were scared of me because I was a 330-pound bald man.
Right.
I got extra gregarious and friendly out in public because I realized, like, oh, the children are frightened of me.
Right.
I better really look like a pleasant person. I think Raiders fans are like that
You know what
bit.
They loved about what we did?
What?
That we left a 49er game in the middle of
to
come to a Raider game.
Yeah, they made him feel special.
It was pretty cool.
They're like, you're coming to us, unlike our basketball team and our football team and everybody that's running away from us. I feel a little bit vindicated because a lot of listeners have said that clip of the 911 call is a little bit like red dress, blue dress, where depending on what you think you hear.
Yeah.
Because at first, I think he sounds Nigerian at the very beginning. And play just the first 5 seconds.
And you believe he's on something?
Oh, absolutely. He's smoking or something.
And he's smoking drugs?
No. See, now I hear the Russian. Yeah.
Because
okay,
I said
it's
Russian
all the time. It's just because he had like a deep voice, I thought at first, like, oh, deep foreign. I hear a deep foreign accent, and I think like Andy Kalu and like all these Nigerians I know that have these deep, like, really
booming,
mellifluous voices.
Bass,
yeah. But now that I hear the Russian, but a lot of our other listeners are saying Cuban. We have a lot of people saying Cuban.
Interesting.
Or somewhere Mediterranean.
Jonesy, give us a little more. Give the people what they want.
We need to get this guy on the phone.
The mover truck guy?
Yes.
All right, Jonesy, we need to find who moved Antonio Brown's stuff. All right, so if you're just tuning in, we played the 911 call from the mover. The mover that Antonio Brown was throwing rocks at his truck, and Antonio Brown and his trainer are trying to steal his keys, may have physically assaulted the guy. Antonio Brown turned himself into Broward County Jail last night for all of this stuff. We're playing chunks of the 911 call. Seth originally thought that this person was Nigerian.
Nigerian or some African country. I couldn't tell.
I thought
it was an African accent.
I thought Russian.
Yeah.
We'll see what all of you think here listening. Here are some more excerpts from the 911 call.
He is definitely hyper because one of his buddies was trying to fight with him to cool him down.
And you believe he's on, you said he's smoking something in front of you?
He did, yes.
Okay.
He tried to grab the keys from my hand. So.
Okay. I can hear both there.
Sir.
We're getting people, we're all over the board. That's good, Jonesy. Yeah. We don't need to turn this into dialect radio.
No let's.
Can we? It's Friday. Is our boss in today? In the next 7 minutes.
He may not be in, but he owns a radio.
I need five Russian callers. I need five callers from Ghana. I need at least one Nigerian and one Cuban. And we're going to figure out, we're going to dice this thing up right here.
And Jonesy, let's play some non-offensive music underneath
Jonesy,
all of it.
I need you to line me up somebody from West Africa, somebody from Senegal. Right. I need somebody from a Caribbean nation and two Eastern Europeans. Don't tell me what they are, and I'll try to ID them.
Scott, am I being insensitive to say that doesn't sound like it'd be a bad bit? Guess the accent?
No, because now we're not talking about races. We're talking about countries.
Just checking. You know, like, it's 2020.
I know. Well, no, people, you're going to get triggered no matter what. You can't even worry about that.
Right.
We're talking specifically about accents from specific countries, not what color anybody's skin is.
We're getting more people weighing in on this than we get weighing in on Eli Manning for the Hall of Fame.
I feel vindicated because a lot of people are weighing in and saying some different African nations. A few people have said Ghanaian. And a couple people, I don't think it sounds Nigerian. Somebody else says it's clearly Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Somebody else says that was Dracula. That is.
Okay. I hate to keep doing this. Jonesy, one more time.
Does it sound like Dracula?
No. He's definitely hyper because one of his buddies was trying to fight with him to cool him down.
And you believe he's on, you said he's smoking something in front of you?
He did, yes.
Okay. I only have 2 hours before the sun comes up. You need to get here immediately.
They're throwing garlic at me right now.
This Antonio Brown.
He's taking his fingers. He's making a cross with them right in my face. Oh, God. Beautiful.
He called me a cracker. What is this? What is this cracker?
Oh, man. Yeah. Text message. I thought African, definitely not Russian. Maybe because you don't see Russians here in the United States. That's not true. There are some Russians.
Used to be a bigger thing back in the 90s. I used to work with a Russian. Meltzer's dad.
Right.
Meltzer's dad's got an awesome Russian accent.
He does.
Yeah, he sounds. He sounds like somebody in a movie.
Yep.
Because Meltzer's dad is like 6'2" and like looks like a man's man. He's like a Russian version of Liam Neeson.
Okay.
Kind of. Yeah.
Boy, what if Mike had gotten those
either that
genes?
Or Nigerian, apparently.
Yeah. Or Dracula.
Apparently,
Mike Meltzer might be a part vampire.
I can't tell the difference between Russian and Nigerian. Yeah. It's a common problem.
So Brown, Antonio, back to Antonio Brown. He didn't respond to a request for a comment on camera Thursday night, but his lawyer commented.
This guy's clearly from Wakanda.
His
he probably is. He's doing a good deed. He's like a Wakandan, just like a Wakandan. He's doing a good deed.
Someone said clearly Chinese. His lawyer's name, Antonio Brown's lawyer's name, is Eric Schwartzreich. And he indicated Brown would spend the night in jail.
That sounds Wakandan, too.
He would spend the night in jail in Fort Lauderdale. And he confirmed there will be a bond hearing Friday morning. Ooh. At 8:30 a.m. They're probably in the middle of it right now. That's Eastern time.
Can we stream this on C-SPAN or anything?
Yeah, can we stream the Antonio Brown
Can we get
bond
the Brevard
hearing,
County
Jonesy?
Police Department to put one of their infamous cameras in the courthouse?
Right, right.
We can watch it.
His lawyer says he's innocent of these charges, so we'll see what happens.
Somebody said that, is it Brevard County? Is that what you said?
Broward County.
Broward County. Yeah. Somebody said that, somebody says, wink, wink, I heard from a friend that the Broward County County jail is pretty damn nasty. So this guy, he has a Florida area code. And I think he's telling me from firsthand experience.
Yeah.
I gotta find the text here. The Broward County Jail is a nightmare. Just because I have a area code 305 phone number doesn't mean I've been there. I heard it from a friend. Wink, wink. So I don't know. I would imagine Broward County. Yeah, South Florida, not known to be the most pleasant brand of criminal down there.
No,
there's a heavily drug influenced culture down there.
If you know the segment I used to do back in my previous life at the station called All Due Respect,
mm-hmm.
It was all about Florida stories. By the way, if you're wondering why did Antonio Brown get jerky about this whole thing, according to ESPN, the shipment contained a large number of his designer clothes and shoes, and it took more than 6 weeks to arrive. He also had a now-fired associate sign for the shipment, and that person did not inform Brown that he would owe $4,000 upon arrival.
How many shoes was it?
It just says a large number.
It took 6 weeks, man. That's the thing about these moving companies. You gotta have a good conversation with them up front, because sometimes, depending on, I've been in a house before, and it's like, oh yeah, we've got your stuff. Well, when's it gonna be here?
Yeah,
couple weeks.
Yeah,
whenever they get around to it,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll
stop asking so many questions.
Stop asking so many questions. You want my Venmo by perchance? Yeah, just ask. Be sure you know up front what the window of time is
that
it's gonna show
That's
up.
That's right.
All right, this is, we need to, we can't let this.
This has turned into blue dress, gold dress.
We can't spend a whole hour on this. But this guy that called 911 on Antonio Brown, now I've got an Arab guy that's saying the Antonio Brown mover is definitely of Arab descent, 100%. It seems like you hear this accent, and depending on what you have in your head or what part you pick out, we've got people that swear he's definitely Russian, others that swear he's Ghanaian, Nigerian, well, and Caribbean this, accent and of
this,
some sort.
This started with you and I playing the 911 call.
Yeah.
And you going, well, you know, and he's clearly, I think you said Nigerian
at first
or of African
the,
descent.
At the very beginning, I thought he was Nigerian.
And I'm going, and then, what? And I'm like, yeah. What are you talking about? He's Russian. And so you and I were like on polar opposites of this thing.
The only thing that ever
triggered the whole text.
So listen for 10 seconds. Yeah. Listen for 10 or 15 seconds and tell us, 713-572-4610, and give us your resume. Tell us if you actually are from, maybe have parents from these countries or what have you. Tell us what you think this guy, where this guy grew up.
No, he is definitely hyper because one of his buddies was trying to fight with him to cool him down.
And you believe he's on, you said he's smoking something in front of you.
He did, yes.
Okay.
He tried to grab the keys from my hand. So.
Okay, sir. Where are the weapons that he had now, the rocks? Does he still have them in his hands?
You know, they right in front of his building. He grabbed them several and tried to enfold in the truck.
Honestly, the only one that universally everybody agrees on is that he sounds like Dracula.
Yeah, he's Transylvanian.
He's the Nigerian Dracula.
He is.
He's the Russian Dracula.
Right.
He's the West Indies Dracula.
The only thing we can agree on.
This guy is some kind of Dracula.
Yeah.
Whatever country you want him to be from, this guy, he's like a chameleon Dracula.
He is.
Play it for 5 more seconds, Jonesy. I can't get enough of this Dracula. Listen as Dracula.
I need to get his description. Hello? Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
He is the black guy. His name Antonio Brown, probably a footballist player.
And I can't get a good look at his neck, so I can bite and get a bite to eat.
Antonio Brown.
I'm thirsty. I want to suck his blood.
Yeah, he is not booming.
Right, right. Yeah. He's not. He keeps coming into my truck, and he keeps saying he's booming.
I'm an accentologist.
He's definitely Lebanese.
Lebanese. Okay. See, yeah.
Is there such thing as an accentologist? I would believe there's almost anything these days.
Once the guy told me Arab, I couldn't not hear the Arab side of
right,
it too.
Right.
I don't want to find out. I don't want to see a picture of this guy. Yeah. I don't want to find out what his actual name is or anything. I don't want to know what his, I don't know, want to know where he's
you
from.
You don't?
I want to believe that he's international Dracula.
He might be the person who can unite all of us.
Yeah,
this person.
True.
He can bring the world together.
He'd almost be.
He sounds like all of us.
Like after the LA riots, how we had, both guys, come together.
Same exact thing.
Yeah, same exact thing.
Same exact thing, yeah. Laramie Tunsil,
mm-hmm.
The folks at NFL.com caught up with Laramie Tunsil and at the Pro Bowl. He and Deshaun Watson are having a grand old time down at the Pro Bowl, as I keep seeing on my social media. They're two very popular players down there. Laramie Tunsil from Florida, so probably pretty cool for him to be
probably
back.
Probably sounds exactly like the guy who just called in.
No, Laramie
right?
Tunsil doesn't
That's
sound
exactly
like
what he sounds like.
He doesn't talk very much. Yeah. But
when he does talk, he does that. Now, Laramie Tunsil has a radio voice.
He absolutely
does. He's got
like a
powerful, deep voice.
He does.
You can see almost like I'm like puffing out my chest now because I feel a little insecure about it.
Right.
I'm lowering my voice as I think about Laramie Tunsil's
right,
voice.
Right, right. Yeah. So here's the quote from Laramie Tunsil. We don't have audio on this because I searched the entire internet
can
to
you
find
do it. Can you do it as International Dracula? Can you read the quote?
This is Laramie Tunsil talking about a potential extension with the Houston Texans, speaking to NFL.com.
I'm cool with it. Whatever coach decides to do, I'm happy. I'd be happy to stay here with Deshaun and help win games.
I like it.
Yeah, that's what International Tunsil sounds
so
like.
So that's a milquetoast quote from...
Yeah, let me read it again in my voice so I don't distract from what he said because there's a sentence in here that I want to dig into.
Oh, okay.
I'm cool with it, talking about a potential extension with the Texans. Whatever coach decides to do, I'm happy. I'd be happy to stay there with Deshaun and help win games. Whatever coach decides to do, I'm happy.
Oh,
I thought
see.
That there were many people involved in these decisions.
Yes, whatever coach decides.
I'm told there's a consensus
right.
that decides these things.
That's interesting. It is interesting. I don't know if I put myself in those shoes as a player, I will say you don't usually necessarily have a great idea of how things actually work in your organization.
Yep.
You never know exactly quite who's calling the shots. I think a lot of guys kind of try to figure out, or at least I always did, like, I'm like, all right, sometimes the coach likes you, but the GM doesn't. Like, who's on my side
Who's
here?
The fox in this thing?
Yeah, like, I always felt like I was a player that coaches loved more than the personnel guys.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I was... I was kind of like the go-getter little scamp, the gym rat type, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
But my measurables,
sucker.
My measurables weren't good. Yeah, a kiss ass, you know, a real brown nose.
Right. Right.
But so you always wonder, like, okay, who's got more pull here and who actually likes me? Do the personnel guys even actually like me?
Yeah.
There's always that. When one of the scouts would come up and compliment me on a game, that would actually mean more than a coach sometimes. Because I'm like, I know the coaches like me, but I don't know if these scouts do.
It is funny. Now that you bring that up, boy, as we sit here and still even a year later dissect the whole Brian game, Bill O'Brien dynamic, it is interesting because the two of them each have these three-word catchphrases that they always use when they talk about guys they like.
Yeah.
And they were, in retrospect, Seth, complete opposites. What did Brian Gaines say all the time when you would ask him about a player he just picked or that he liked? Well, he's got the traits we look for: height,
right,
weight, speed.
Right.
What does Bill O'Brien say? He's got the traits we look for: smart, tough, dependable.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right.
Can you find
right.
two more opposite guys?
Right, right. And usually that works out well. That's, again, those are the checks and balances
yes.
that you get with the GM and a coach, because coaches have a tendency to fall in love with it. And this is the biggest problem. This is the thing that makes a guy like Belichick capable of doing both, is that he can detach himself from his coach's role and look at things objectively. Any coach listening to this knows this right now. If you don't yet know this, you will learn the hard way at some point in your career. You end up getting blind spots for certain players, yeah. both good and bad. You put a halo effect on some players where you almost can't see their weaknesses. And then in professional sports especially, you can't see when they've really started to decline. You kind of have assumptions about them, and you feel like almost like that kid can do no wrong. Mm-hmm. So you need somebody that's a little bit more detached on the personnel side to be able to point out and say, hey, Bill, actually, you know, he wasn't that good this year. Likewise, sometimes coaches have it in their head that they don't like a guy and he doesn't play well, and they refuse to see the good. I kind of worried when I was watching D'Antoni watch Hartenstein the other night, that's what I was looking for. I was actually kind of looking for, okay, does D'Antoni have a natural bias against Hartenstein to where he's going to really overreact to everything negative and not even notice the positive? Hartenstein had a dunk. D'Antoni didn't move at all. Hartenstein missed out on a rebound. And this is at the end of a blowout game. And D'Antoni was livid. So that's where the personnel guys come in. So in that relationship, all right, maybe D'Antoni has an issue with Hartenstein. Maybe he doesn't. I'm just reading into a small morsel.
Yeah.
But the GM, Daryl Morey, is the counterweight to that, yeah. to where they can have a discussion. I worry that with Bill O'Brien as the GM, there's no counterweight.
Yeah, who's it's the just, guy? Who's the guy that's saying, yeah, smart, tough, and dependable, but how about good at football, Bill?
Right, or just, okay, yes, we love Whitney Mercilus too. He's very dependable. He's right. very versatile. He does all those things. How much is that actually worth? And the GM is typically going to be the guy that's kind of the more detached guy that says, all right, look, I love him too, Bill, but is this where we really want to spend the money, because he might not have these other traits that we're also looking for?
And maybe that's where, if the Texans do wind up hiring somebody like Nick Caserio, or maybe even hiring Nick Caserio himself down the road, that should excite Texan fans, because at least it would hopefully be I don't want to say dissenting voice, but it'd be what we hope is a contrasting voice
yeah.
when it comes to players. I'll tell you, Seth, I mean, and I've said since the season ended, I'm nervous about this team right now, and there's a lot of reasons I'm nervous. One of the biggest reasons I'm nervous is I don't know what O'Brien's evaluation criteria is for guys who aren't obviously star players. Of course, Laremy Tunsil could have some warts and some issues. You better sign him. You gave up two first-round picks for him. Deshaun Watson is clearly a great player. DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, they're going to get new contracts probably at some point. It's easy to recognize those things. My fear is that looking at guys who are in that meaty part of the curve, or even on the margin somewhere, that are you overvaluing things that don't translate on Sundays? Mm-hmm. Are you evaluating all these things that happen Monday through Saturday and over-evaluating them and over-emphasizing them at the expense of putting actual good football players on
right.
the field?
And those are the decisions that made multiple times, you know, add up.
Yes.
They add up a lot.
That's right, man.
And sometimes at the expense of bringing in genuine. So it is, and again, I'm trying, Cal, just because honestly, I can't go through a whole offseason of just proclaiming failure and doom. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to live that way. But this is an experiment. You know, this, as Bill O'Brien himself has said, there might not be another team in the league set up quite like it is right now. So it's an experiment by definition. You're the only one that's doing it this way. Let's see how it works out. Right now, I have a healthy amount of skepticism.
Yes.
I'd love to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
Love to.
So we started on this because Laremy Tunsil said he wants to be back in Houston.
And we wanted to make him sound like
that too.
Yeah.
But the point of that is, he wants to be back in Houston. He's got all the leverage right now because of what they gave up to get him and because he's a really good player and he's heading into his what would be his fifth-year option. If for some reason they get sideways with Laremy Tunsil to where they have to use a franchise tag on him and he pulls a Clowney at some point, and they end up having to trade him, and they don't even get close to equal value back, that's a fireable offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you shoved your two drafts.
Oh,
you
yeah.
shoved your two day yeah. ones of the next two drafts to the middle of the table, and the guy wound up staying here for two. You know, one season in 2019 and maybe a disgruntled season in 2020.
If you think of one of the biggest mistakes made in franchise history, it was to give Brock Osweiler all that money, right? But that was a mistake that was relatively easy to get out of. I give Rick Smith full credit for that. They were able to push the eject button on that, and it cost you in terms of a draft pick.
Second round pick, yeah.
But it wasn't nearly the same as putting in two first round picks and then also giving whatever amount of money you're going to have. Yeah, if you all of a sudden turn Laremy Tunsil into a two-year rental somehow for giving up two first-round picks, that's the exact opposite of what you're planning on in devastating the future. Yeah, that would be fireable.
Unless you win a Super Bowl.
Right.
Unless you win a Super Bowl in 2020, and then you can just say, well, all these moves led to a Super Bowl.
A lot of people are saying, as far as the 911 caller, at first he sounded African, but then he said, he's the black guy. That it's hard to see a black guy calling up and being like, you know, he's the black guy.
Yeah.
Probably not Nigerian or Cameroonian or anything.
Might be a tell. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
Our boss is having us do a pretty cool thing. We're doing some thank you notes to a few special people that have given us, some listeners that have helped us out. So
yeah.
I'm trying to individualize each one, but frankly, Sean, I'm worried that it's taking my focus from the show itself.
Yeah, well,
because I'm thanking six specific listeners, I'm abandoning the 400,000 or 500,000 other listeners.
I feel bad that it took me like
maybe 2 million. I'm not sure how many we have this morning.
Somewhere in between and 2 million. Yeah. I'm a big advocate of handwritten notes.
Your dad sent me one.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think he's ever even met you.
I'm still nervous. I haven't written a long form response letter to something like that in a while. It's been over a month since he sent me the letter, and I still need to respond.
Tell
him if he's listening right now. Thank you, Mr. Pendergast. I genuinely really appreciate it. It touched me.
You'll meet him at the wedding.
Okay.
You can reciprocate.
I gotta write it before then.
hand it to him.
Yes. I'm gonna put it in scroll form. What a seal.
We started with hear ye, hear ye.
Yeah.
That's how all scroll. All good scrolls start with hear ye, hear ye. So let's give the update. We mentioned Justin Reed in headlines here. Let's just give that quick update that Justin Reed from his hospital bed yesterday. If you're worried about number 20, worry not, Texan fans.
Hello, everybody. Fresh out of surgery, just got me in a sling. Just want to let you guys know that I'm doing great right now. Surgery went great. I'm up in this hotel room. Basically, suite in the hospital. I mean, it's actually really nice to do a good job here. TV going and everything, about to eat some breakfast. But just want to go out and say thank you to everyone who shot me a text, a message. I got major love for you guys, for all the support and love that you are showing me. And just let you guys know that I'm excited about this journey to recovery and getting healthy and being out there for the 2020 season. And I'm just excited about it. So I appreciate you guys and major love.
He sounds very lucid for someone who just came out of surgery.
Oh, no, but he did sound relaxed too.
Relaxed,
he's probably
but
on the
like
good stuff. The shoulder surgery, actually, I've had over a dozen orthopedic surgeries. The shoulder surgeries were the most annoying to me. Other than, well, okay.
Why were they annoying?
Well, because you can't sleep. Mm. Like, there's no bad. Anybody that's had shoulder surgery knows you try to sleep in a recliner for 2 weeks or so. If you're anybody that tosses around when you're asleep, especially, there's almost no possible way to get comfortable sleeping.
Yeah.
Because you have to stay off your shoulder, sleep on your side or whatever. So that can get, it's kind of, I guess, the way when people have rib injuries, the same thing. It affects your sleep so much.
Yeah.
You can kind of end up in this just drone state for a couple of weeks. So maybe Justin Reed is at the beginning of perhaps that stretch.
Yeah. So that was Justin Reed. This is what got me thinking yesterday, and I think Justin Reed falls into the category of players we're about to talk about. I will credit our old friend Dave Zangaro. Remember Dave from CSN Houston?
Oh, yeah. He's up in Philly now.
He's in Philly now. Yeah, so he's in Philly. He's covering the Eagles, and I follow him still. And he put up an article yesterday that made me think this is a good topic for the Texans, especially because it's the Pro Bowl this weekend. He put up an article. Jonesy, you're an Eagle fan if you want to go find it, where he said, who could be the Eagles' first-time Pro Bowler next year? And I read the article, but then I thought, oh, this is an interesting topic for the Texans because the Texans have a a lot of guys who have not made the Pro Bowl,
right.
But some who are getting paid to make the Pro Bowl now, and some who are young players who are maybe ready to take that next step to making the Pro Bowl. Laremy Tunsil made his first one this year. Deshaun's now been to two. It doesn't look like Hopkins is at the Pro Bowl. I'm guessing because of the rib injury, he bowed out of the Pro Bowl because he's not in any of these pictures or videos with Laremy and Deshaun.
Yeah. I think Cunningham leaps to mind because, for one...
And the question is, who are the candidates to be the Texans' first time... Their next first-time Pro Bowler next year.
I think immediately you think, okay, Justin Reed, Zach Cunningham. I'll go through levels. I'll go through all the levels.
Who are the most likely?
Defensive back, Justin Reed.
Yeah.
Linebacker, first-timer would be Zach Cunningham. Mm-hmm. Defensive line, DJ Reader.
If he's back.
If he's back, right. Like, there's some guys that closed out the season. Offensive line, perhaps Nick Martin. Laremy Tunsil's already been.
Laremy Tunsil's there right now.
He's there right now, yeah. So perhaps Zach Martin, Nick Martin. Zach's been a couple times.
Now here, just real quick, Zach's going to wind up going to the Hall of Fame someday.
Yeah.
Here are the alternates that the Texans had in 2019. Whitney Mercilus, Nick Martin, Zach Cunningham, DJ Reader.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Cunningham and Reader. Nick Martin and Mercilus fall into a category, Seth, where they're getting salaries now, where they probably need to make a Pro Bowl at some point here. $11 million and $13 million a year.
I think Nick Martin, the leap he took this year was, in a lot of ways, I think, more mental than physical. On the physical side of things, I think he just stayed healthy. It was as simple as that. And that's where O'Brien was taking kind of a gamble on paying a guy that had been banged up for a couple straight years. Not that he was necessarily injury prone or anything, but I don't think Nick Martin had really shown that he was worth that money yet. It was still a little bit of a gamble, but you got to figure, all right, if the guy hits free agency, he's going to get good money. And then all of a sudden we have to start all over with a center that doesn't have a relationship with Deshaun Watson, doesn't know the checks and all that stuff. So what I'm talking about with Nick Martin, the leap that I think he took more than anywhere else was mental when it came to actually helping set protections, identifying blitzers, the mic, all that stuff. I think that it was a more seamless process this year with Deshaun Watson. I think there was actual progress. I didn't see as many. A lot of times with a center and two guards, it's hard to tell who screwed up. It's hard to figure exactly without knowing the protection whose fault it was. All I know is that prior to this year, there were a whole lot of times where there were guys unabated through the A-gap to the quarterback.
All the time.
And that's almost always a mental error.
Yeah.
Whether it's because the guards next to him got smarter or because Nick Martin got better at directing traffic, we didn't see that as much this year.
They were more effective.
Right. And I'll give credit to Mike Devlin and TJ Yates as the coaches too for fixing whatever the hell was going on in the previous years that wasn't nearly as bad this year.
So I don't know that Whitney Mercilus is ever going to make a Pro Bowl.
I thought he already did one year. I didn't. I feel like I can. I have an image in my brain of him wearing the lay in the red.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'll look it up while you and I are talking about this. And this is not me hating on Whitney Mercilus at all. I think we've probably seen Whitney's best. And if we get Whitney's best the next couple years, I'm cool with that. I don't know that I would pay $13 million a year for that, but it is what it is now. The contract is done. I'm happy for Whitney personally because I think he's a great guy. There's a reason he got the sportsmanship award at the Houston Sports Awards the other night.
Yeah.
Whitney's a great dude, and I'm sure he's an awesome guy in the locker room, and he's a good teammate. He's a great Houstonian. But I don't know that heading into his age, he's going to turn 30 in July.
Right.
I don't know that Whitney Mercilus is all of a sudden going to take this next step as some sort of edge rusher who's going to go get you 12 sacks.
Well, I think it might also depend on what the scheme looks like. And with Anthony Weaver, there's a chance that the scheme's going to look a lot different. Like, Anthony has played under different – he's coached. First of all, he's played under different coordinators, but he's also coached under different coordinators. And he played under Rex Ryan, and Rex Ryan can get as funky as anybody with what he throws at an offense. And he's played with more conservative coordinators and aren't as exotic, like Romeo Crennel. And Romeo is advanced with the times. He's not as bland and vanilla as he was back with the Patriots and the Browns. But still – it could turn into one of these things where maybe the outside linebackers for the Texans start getting a whole bunch of sacks the way they do in, say, like a Wade Phillips defense. And Mercilus might have more opportunities. There's times where Mercilus is being more of a run first type of player, or he's jamming the tight end before he enters his pass rush. And that makes it harder to become a blistering off the edge type of type of outside linebacker. You know, there's in some defenses, he might not be that. He might just have more opportunities to get good pass rushes.
I do wonder how much of Whitney's new contract is sort of retribution pay for the year that he had to sit there and cover tight ends out of the backfield.
Right,
the year
right.
that where they were only rushing J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney.
2018.
I wonder how much of that is like, hey, we're going to duke you a little extra because you were completely misused for a year.
and again, that's where it gets interesting. Because we talked in the previous segment about, okay, coaches tend to value different things than personnel guys do. And what GMs, most GM guys are personnel guys. GM guys value traits, you know, speed, explosiveness, actually hitting the quarterback. Coaches really value versatility, great attitude, all of those things.
Selflessness.
And those things, unfortunately, don't always get rewarded. I feel like O'Brien's trying to do the right thing and reward that kind of attitude. He's trying to almost like signing Whitney almost as like an example of what you want the culture to be and hope other guys follow suit. But it's not necessarily the things that it's not what the going market rate is for those guys.
Yeah,
no, you know?
It's like, I feel like the conversation should be, Bill, it was really nice you did this for Whitney. You know there's a salary cap, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know you can only do this for so many guys. You can't do this for all the guys that you like. So who will be the Texans' first-time Pro Bowler next season if they have one? I would say, I think you touched on the two right away, Seth, that immediately come to mind for me is Justin Reed and Zach Cunningham. If I had to put my money on anybody, it would be Justin Reed. I would bet Justin Reed, safety position, fully healthy, not having to come off the field in 10 of the 16 games because of a shoulder injury.
Right.
And heading into year three.
And I think with Casey, I'm going to make a Casey Hampton comparison. I think the thing with DJ Reader that's going to hurt him is, or at least that hurt him this year, was that the defense wasn't good. Nose tackles generally get a whole lot of recognition if they're on a really good run defense.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when Sam Adams and Tony Siragusa got a whole lot of attention when they were on a really good defense. Casey Hampton was an awesome, awesome nose tackle who was also on a really good defense. So it's easy to recognize that, you know?
Yep.
Nose tackles, no matter how good they are when they're not on a good defense, they kind of, they're almost like quarterbacks in that they people say, oh, you're a 3-4 and you're not a good defense. Well, then I don't respect your nose tackle.
Yep.
It's not fair. It's not fair at all. If the Texans have if DJ's here and the Texans have a really good defense next year, I think DJ will get a whole bunch. He could play the exact same way as he did this year, but he'll actually get recognition for it next year.
Casey Hampton, 5-time Pro Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. And he was like, but now if Casey had played the exact same way, but been on a bad defense, people just wouldn't have, they feel like, no, you can't be a good nose tackle if you're not on a good defense.
The window inside, it was about a 7-year window. He was a 5-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
The Steelers won 2 Super Bowls inside that window.
And he was a huge part of
he
it.
He was.
Like, he was a really good nose tackle on a really good defense.
Yep. I would say the other players I would throw in, if I were rating them, I'd say the favorites are Cunningham and Reed to become Pro Bowlers next year. I would say Nick Martin is probably next on the list. I think Merciless is a long shot unless, like you said, maybe the scheme change leads to some numbers that would put him in that conversation.
Yeah.
Whitney's a known commodity, so he doesn't have to overcome that. Like a lot of times, like Nick Martin, I feel like defensive linemen and offensive linemen to some degree, yeah, you need to be on a good team, but you also need to pay your penance at some point. Like Dwayne Brown was one of the best left tackles in football by 2010 probably.
Yeah.
It wasn't until 2011 or 2012 where he started to get the recognition for it.
There's something about Whitney, and this is where I'll say that hopefully what the strategy would be is there's something about knowing exactly what you have in Whitney that allows you perhaps to get a little bit more of a wild card on the other side.
Yeah.
A guy that might not always get his responsibilities correct, but we know if you line him up on the open side and just let him get after it, he's going to mess up a quarterback's day.
Yeah.
That kind of guy, there's a yin and a yang there where you want to offset him with a Whitney Merciless.
That's what I have to keep constantly reminding myself with all of these moves, including moves made with the front office, moves made within the coaching staff, is I want to give the benefit of the doubt to the flat organizational structure that this is going to end at a place where I feel good about this team going into the year. It's just that I know the person who has the biggest voice on the flat organizational structure is ostensibly, he's not doing a great job at the job he was brought in here to do. He's doing okay. He wins divisions, Bill O'Brien. He gets you to the playoffs. But the way they lose in the playoffs to good teams, that gives me pause that there's this some master plan where ultimately, especially without the draft capital that you would need to do that they're going to wind up at a place where I'm comfy.
Were you
it's all about me being comfy.
What's your favorite topography for an organizational chart? Like it feels like they're trying to make it a desert over there.
Right.
They got rid of the cap guy.
I like a trip to the mountains sometimes.
Yeah. Who's got the biggest organizational chart from top to bottom? Like, has the most separation between the owner and say the players?
Oh,
on
that's
the-
a good question. I know the least flat one is New England because it's just a silhouette of Bill Belichick.
I bet it seems like maybe the Cowboys, because the Cowboys you have this weird thing where Jerry Jones is at the top, but he's involved, and Stephen Jones is under him. But you get the sense that okay, maybe they're trying to get more people in the brain trust. I bet it's Cowboys. Cowboys have a lot of people throwing their 2 cents in.
Let me throw a wild.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me throw a wild card name at you for this Pro Bowl discussion we're having. Will Fuller.
Oh boy! I bet everybody in Houston had the same response to that, which is, well, sure, if he stays healthy for 16
right,
games.
Right.
I was talking to Andre Johnson about Will Fuller and just Andre. For one, I can say this, Andre's. I always get very careful when I'm talking to Andre about anything because I know he works for the organization, and Andre's the last person on earth that ever wants to say anything, that gives up anything about the organization and everything. But we were talking about Will Fuller, and because we were talking about just what it's like when you have a chronic string of injuries like that, because most guys have been through it. And I'm glad I talked to Andre because, honestly, I was bad at evaluating the Will Fuller situation this year because I did not bring up his ACL enough, which I should have, because as a receiver, well, especially when you are as fast as Will Fuller, when you're coming off of an ACL, it's not as simple as just like, hey, it's better, and now go out and run really fast. Those guys that are as fast as Will Fuller are, when you're coming off of an ACL, even though you're able to go out there and play, you're never really 100%. And when you're talking the speed and force on his joints and everything, what I'm hopeful for is that these soft tissue things this year were kind of just an offshoot from his ACL, and that this year in the offseason now, he'll be well over a year removed from his ACL, and he can just get his body right, get everything aligned, get biomechanically correct. And I know that he's really working at it and he's really conscious of it. But that's the – if you're trying to think, all right, is there a chance for Will Fuller, remember that – that ACL might have been the exact cause for him having issues this year, and next year might be a whole different deal.
Do you think he's a Pro Bowl level player if he plays 15 or 16 games?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's like he just...
That would give the Texans 2 Pro Bowl wide receivers.
Now, if he had to go and be the number one guy on his own team, I don't know if he would be, but in conjunction with DeAndre Hopkins out there, because of the opportunities and the number of touchdowns that he might get, yeah. And like, and especially he has the potential to do it with like an average 19 yards per reception.
The AFC...
It's wide open.
The AFC is not as deep at wide receiver as you would think it is. DeAndre Hopkins is clearly the cream of the crop in the AFC. The other starter was Keenan Allen, who might not have Philip Rivers as his core. Keenan Allen might have a rookie throwing to him next year. Yeah. The other Pro Bowlers who were voted in were Jarvis Landry, who's essentially a glorified possession guy for Cleveland, and Tyreek Hill, who I think is just a massively explosive weapon. The guys who've replaced Hopkins and Hill because of injury in Super Bowl are Cortland Sutton and DJ Chark.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the 6 best wide receivers in the AFC. Will Fuller, he may not crack the top 2. Right? The starters won't be Hopkins and Fuller unless Deshaun Watson throws for 5 billion yards next year.
I'll tell you one thing.
But he can be one of the best 4.
Cortland Sutton and DJ Chark are probably guys that I'm guilty of at some point saying, like, don't worry about those two. They're like, oh, damn it.
They're in the Pro Bowl.
Damn it, those guys. Well, no, and they've hurt the Texans,
they
especially.
Have, yeah.
Like, they've both very specifically hurt the Texans.
Yep.
DJ Chark was like, all of a sudden, that's going to be interesting to watch him. Because DJ Chark was a little bit lost in the shuffle, but for a while there, he was actually the go-to guy with the Jaguars this year.
Yeah, enough to where he made the Pro Bowl as an alternate. Yeah, absolutely.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.